This interview is with Mr. T.A. Harrell, Chairman of the Board of Mercantile National Bank of Kingsville. The interviewer is Melvin Bohannon. Mr. Harrell was born in Grandview, Texas on November 4, 1901. He was raised on a farm in the Grandview area. During this interview, Mr. Harrell relates his experiences while living on the farm and describes his move to Bishop in 1913. Mr. Harrell talks about the conditions in and around Bishop from 1913 to approximately 1940.
Operated, in addition to farming, he operated a cotton gin. And in those days, the cotton seed had no value. They would just give it, just take their wagon and team and haul the cotton seed out on the creek and dump it in the creek somewhere. Of course, later on, it was made into many uses. One thing to feed the cattle and make cottonseed hulls and many other things. There was no money to speak of, so the farmers paid the ginner, the man that owned the gin, they gave him so many pounds of lint cotton for ginning that bale of cotton for him, and they put this lint cotton back in the room when they got as much as 400 or 500 pounds, then they'd make a bale out of it, and that would be a bale that belonged to the ginner, which would pay him for ginning the other man's cotton. And my dad grew up as a young man. He was born in Johnson County, too, about 6 miles out in the country. I was born almost the same place, the same farm. Actually, I was really born the same farm my dad was, 6 miles out in the country, about halfway between Grandview and Alvarado, Texas. And I went to school there. I was the oldest child of the five in my family, and my dad bought a little Shetland pony for me to ride 2 miles to a country school. And the little pony had been trained in a circus, and he wouldn't go about a mile, and he'd turn around and go back home. I couldn't make him go to school. So my dad finally caught me a ride with some older people in a buggy, and I rode this 2 miles in a buggy every day until my brother next to me, 2 years younger, became old enough to go to school, and my dad bought us a horse and buggy, and we drove in 5 miles or 6 miles to town. And back in those days, everybody lived in town. It happened to be Grandview. Everyone had a cow out, they called it in those days. Everybody had a cow, everybody had a windmill. So we made a trade with someone there to leave our horse and take the horse off of him and leave him in this lot every day and feed him when we got to town. Then take our lunch, which mother had fixed in a little paper bag, go to school, and when school was out at 4 o'clock, we'd go back to this man's house in town and harness up our horse and put him to the buggy and drive about 6 miles home without it, no top on it. And we did that for several years. In 1911, my mother and I were picking black-eyed peas out on this farm one day, pretty close to the old country road that we lived on. There were no paved roads anywhere in those days, except right downtown Fort Worth or right downtown Dallas and Waco, just right through the main street. So we were picking black-eyed peas on the side of the road 6 miles out in the country, and we heard some noise, and we looked up, and it was the first automobile either one of us ever saw. Never saw a car before. It was 1911, and in those days, it was an old open car with a big steering wheel was sticking up high. The people wore, the driver wore what was called a duster, kind of a slicker type thing made out of cloth that they wore to keep the dirt off of them. They wore large goggles and a cap, and they wore gloves that had a long cuffs on them. And that was because all the roads were dust. The dust was just flying, you know, and that was to keep the driver from getting so dirty. So that was our first experience of seeing an automobile. So it was quite a surprise, you know. We'd heard of it, but never saw one. In 1913, I remember I was riding my bicycle. My mother said I was very fond of first the tricycle, which back in those days was no sidewalks where we lived. So I was like to ride my tricycle in the house. Wooden floors, no carpet. So she said you could imagine the noise I would make as I would ride a tricycle around all over that three-room house, I guess. And if it's real dry, I'd get outside and beat me out a path around a tree. And then when I got a little older, they bought me a bicycle.
And one day I was riding between our barn and the house, and my dad drove up in a wagon. He'd been to town with a load of cotton. And he stopped me and told me that he had just heard while he was in town, this was in April 1913, that the Titanic was sunk that day before. And I remember right where I was when I was riding this bicycle when it happened. Recently I was up at North Texas just 3 months ago, and I drove over there from Corsicana where I was based, and I drove over there one afternoon and drove out the old home plate. And the home is gone, and all the old buildings are gone, just the four old towers with the windmill standing, no wheels on it, no water tower. And that's what was left of where we used to live, where all of my brother and sister were born. And I also stopped and looked at the place and walked on the ground where Mother and I were standing when we saw the first car in 1911. This was 1972, about 3 months ago. So those things bring back memories to you when you go up. 1913, my dad went to Alvareda, which is about 6 miles where we lived, and bought a 1913 model Oberlin. They called them touring cars in those days. There was no door, they were just two-seaters, but they just opened. And he bought a new touring car. So that was in March. So in July 1913, he decided he would get his family. I was the oldest one. I'd be about 11 years old. And I had three brothers and sisters younger than I, so we decided we'd come to South Texas from Johnson County. Because he had a sister living at Sinton, Texas. So we started out, we left Grandview about noon one day, and by night we had reached about 10 miles south of Waco, because there were no roads, so there was no paved roads. You just followed a man's fish line, you just followed the farm. And there was not a highway department, so the state of Texas put out a little brochure. And you would set your trip, pedometers in those days had trips on them, where you set it. We set that on zero, and then they tell you to go 0.8 mile and turn to your right, go 4 miles and turn left, or go 5 miles and ford a creek. And it was like that all the way from Grandview, Texas, to Sinton, Texas, about 400 miles, except when you're going through town. And they had that marked, what they call the old Spanish Trail. They had a, on the post through cities like Waco and San Antonio, it was marked on the telephone pole so you wouldn't get lost going through the city. So we spent the first night south of Waco, about 10 miles, and no motels, of course, in those days. We had no money. There could have been a hotel somewhere, I don't know, I never stayed in one at that time. And so we and my mother and dad carried cots. We put these cots up at night, and they had skillets and coffee pots, and we would cook out and eat and sleep on these cots, and the next daylight we'd get up and start again. It wasn't raining, we could make fairly good time. You'd make about 15, 20 miles an hour, I guess. Back in those days, you had a lot of flats on these old high-pressure 34x4 tires, and you had to fix them with cold flap, or even with hot patches. You'd take an old rim and take it off with a tube and fix the hot patch, I mean a cold patch on it. You'd have to put this stuff on there and glue it and put that patch on there. And my dad rigged up an adapter. You'd screw a spark plug out of your motor on the car and put this adapter in there and put a pump in there, and it had a hose to go around to the car and pump up the tire without you having to do it by hand. Well, you had flats on a few miles anyway. In fact, the life of a tire in those days was about 1,000 to 1,500 miles as far as the tire go without wearing out. So that second night then, we spent at San Marcos, Texas, and we camped. Second night, we spent there at San Marcos, Texas, next door to a firehouse that they had there. And I was in San Marcos 2 or 3 weeks ago at the A&I San Marcos football game. And there was the same old fire station that still lay, being used for something else. But in those days, they kept two horses there hooked up to their fire wagon. And all they had to do was mash a button and the collar would fall down over the horse's neck and fasten on the bottom, and they would be gone with that collar fighting equipment, which was pulled by horses in those days. But anyway, that building is still there, and that's where we camped out on our second night to South Texas in 1900. 2016. It was raining all of those days and this particular year, and we made as far as Floresville the third night. It came up a rainstorm and lightning and all during the night, so we had to get out of where we were parked at Floresville and try to get out on the road. As you come to real bad places, well, farmers would have mules with several double trees standing by to pull people through at a cost of $5 to $10 to pull you through a mud hole. That made real good revenue. But that's the only way you could go in those days. So now you can, I have left Waco after a football game in the afternoon and come to Kingsville. Back in those days, it took me 3 days and three nights. So that's the difference in transportation at that time. Back in those, after the trip we came to Kingsville, to Sentinel in 1913, went back to Grandview, of course. My dad decided he'd move to South Texas that same year. So in December of 1913, we moved to Bishop. The Bishop was a small town that just started in 1910 by a man named F.C. Bishop. He was quite a developer and was two or three times a millionaire during his life, but he's quite a plunger. And I knew him well, and his nephew, his sister's boys, and I grew up together in Bishop, and one of them roomed with me as my roommate in Bay University. But anyway, we moved back down to Bishop in 1913. On a farm about a half a mile from town, the house is still there. The family still owns the farm. Back in those days, there wasn't too much of the country in cultivation. It was what was called, was in brushland. There were mesquites in the Bishop area, but had a little low running mesquite to be about knee high, little bushes, and back in those days they put it in cultivation with big steam plows. And these steam plows used wood to make the steam, just regular old mesquite wood. They'd be pulling about three or four turning plows, mowers back behind that, turning this land upside down, plowing it so they could put it in cultivation and farm it. And when we moved down there on this place that we bought, my dad bought, there's 40 acres of that was what was called new land. So we put in cultivation, that's a rustum plow, and rode the plow behind these steam engines. It's called sod land. New land is called sod land in those days. This land down here is called, it had what they call hogwallace land, which is supposed to be real good black land if it had hogwallace. That meant every 20, 30 feet, there would be a dish out like this where the water's standing if it's raining. They call it a hog water land, which is real good black land. So my dad put this in cultivation after we moved to South Texas. And these big moldboard plows were tying up these roots, and it was so heavy, infested with roots on the ground, it's just almost solid. And they would turn it up on top of the ground, and we'd have to get labor, mostly Latin labor, to go in there with grubbing holes and axe and cut those things loose and pile them up, and then they'd take a wagon and haul it in close to our barn and stack it up. And I recall from just this 40 acres that my dad put in cultivation after we moved down here, it was a stack of roots about 100 feet long and 30 feet wide and 20 feet high. And what we used it for, back in those days, cotton pickers were brought in by a train. And there were no cars, no trucks in those days, so you had to bring your cotton pickers in from North Texas or Mexico or wherever, bring them on a train, and then you'd meet them at the train in a wagon and take them out to your house, wherever you lived on the farm, and they always had a few tent houses where these cotton pickers would live. There was no furniture in it, and no stove, no nothing, and they'd use these roots that we had, so-called, to build a fire to cook their food on outside the room on the ground. So I recall that these roots that we had came from this sod land. Lasted my dad, farm hands, just cooking in the cotton picking season only. It lasted about 15 years before we burned it all up. And now, of course, there are no cotton pickers brought in here at all. The fall of the year now in South Texas is hardly noticeable. Back in those days, it would be thousands of people There'd be so many people on the streets of Bishop and Kingsville on Saturday afternoon and payday that you couldn't walk down the street. And even young boys in high school would build them a hamburger stand on the street and sell soda water and hamburgers and make $40 to $50 a day. And now you wouldn't even know when they're picking cotton here because it's all done by machinery. There's no help brought in here. Moving down here back in those days, of course, people had to move by freight cars, by train. And almost every train that went through Bishop had one to three to five what we called immigrant cars in those days. In other words, it was a freight train, freight car that had the doors open on it and had it boxed up or boarded up about 2 feet at the top so the mules and cattle could get air in there because all the farmers moving down here. And my dad, for instance, had 12 head of mules and two cows and our chickens and our dog was all in this car along with our furniture. You put the furniture on one end, each end of the box car, and then you build up boards, face it off, and you put your mules in there. And in the two, three towns between here and North Texas or wherever the farmer had to be moving from, the train would stop, the freight train would stop at a place where they could unload and take the animals off and water them, then put them back on the car and come on. So many a time at Bishop, I've watched freight trains go through and see a number of what we call immigrant cars going through. People moving down to South Texas from all over Texas, even from up north. The town of Kingsville in those days, about 1913, was about 2,500 population. Bishop was about 1,000, 800 to 1,000, and Corpus was 8,000, Corpus Christi. Robstown about 1,500. And as late as 1920, Corpus only had 10,000 people. And F.C. Bishop was putting on this little town of Bishop. He did it, and really, he built a real large hotel, which still stands there right now, being used, not as a hotel, but several families live in it. It used to be quite a place to have parties and all that, a very lovely dining room, a large chandelier. In fact, my class, as I finished high school in Bishop 1921, my class was the first one to have a alumni banquet, and we had it in this old hotel, which was new at that time. We organized the alumni banquet in Bishop 1921. F.C. Bishop started the town of Bishop in 1910. It was 3 years old when we arrived there. And it had a number of brick buildings. And became to graduate as seniors in 1912, Bishop only had enough students. They only went to the ninth grades. So the ones that were seniors that year and Bishop graduated the ninth grade. Well, next year the town had grown, so they added the 10th grade. So that same bunch graduated again. The next year, the town had grown so they had the 11th grade. So some of those kiddos up there who were friends of mine graduated from Bishop High School three times. I graduated in 1921 with a class of 14, three boys and 11 girls. 1897, my dad, going back a little bit, came to Gregory, which is just a few miles from Portland, across the bay from Corpus Christi. He had a relative living in Gregory, so my dad and my granddad came to Gregory on a train in 1897 to make a visit. That's where my dad married. And the only way you could get to Corpus Christi from Portland to Gregory was two mules to a wagon. You followed the Nueces Bay. And for years after I moved down here, you could still see those cedar posts that went from Portland, Texas to Corpus Christi in the bay out there on the west side of the causeway. The causeway was washed away a number of times due to the Gulf Storm. But you could still see those cedar posts there for many, many years. And my dad said that the water would get up as high as the bottom of the bed of the wagon, be way up on the stomach of the mules. But that's the only way you could get from there to Corpus Christi. Of course, you take you a day to go over it all about, you know, the time he got over and got away, and so he'd have to spend a night. You either had to do that or you had to go around by Sinton and Odom, and then cross the Genesis River on a ferry, and then all the way into Corpus Christi through the brush country that way by wagon, which would take you about 2 days. For many years, that's 7 years, as we moved down here, and we'd be going from Bishop, where we lived, over to Sinton to see our relatives. There was no bridge across the Yankees River at Cal Island, and we crossed the river on a ferry. And the man would drive down on there, and the man would take a hill, and he had a cable across there, and he'd pull you across, pull the ferry across. When F.C. Bishop was putting this town on, he built a beautiful park there, and he had a dam and had a lake, and canoeing, a boathouse, a bathhouse, a bandstand. He had a fence park with a 15 or 20 live deer in it, and the bishop had a band that played 2 or 3 times a week at this bandstand. Bishop also belonged to the Gulf Coast League, Baseball League, which played every day, just like the professional Texas League. Kingsville and Bishop and Corpus Christi and Sinton, maybe Iris, I've forgotten the other town, played every day, paid players, played 7 days a week. And the ballpark was down at where the Bishop Park is now, but a lot of the land, or some of the land, has been used for homes. But at this very time, the people of Bishop are in the process of rebuilding this dam, which has washed out several times over a period of 60 years. And of course, there's some activity there now, but not like it was when F.C. Bishop was there. F.C. Bishop would bring these passenger trains in from up north. He called them snow diggers. He'd go up to Minnesota and Wyoming and Illinois and other northern states and tell the people, give them a good sales pitch about this land in South Texas. It's good black land, fertile land, virgin soil. Still has to be put in cultivation, most of it. And he'd bring a train load down, passenger train load, and they'd stop at Bishop. And I was a Boy Scout back in those days after, well, about 1915, I guess, when I was a little older than I was when I moved there in 13. I belonged to the Scout. And he would get the Boy Scouts to put on their uniforms and meet these passenger trains to make it look a little uptown and carry their suitcases and baggage for these snow diggers over to Bishop Hotel to spend the night. He had a Cadillac or two, some type of car, some big car, but most of them were carried out in buggies or surreys. Surrey, of course, is a two horses to a two-seated carriage, just like a buggy. He would come out on these farms, and the farms were laid out. All the Bishop territory was laid out in sections, which would be a mile square. Be a dirt road every cross-section mile. And that would be 640 acres, of course, in a section, and he'd put four houses up in the middle of the section, and the roads would be all the way around it. He'd have a dirt road, of course, all these were dirt roads. He'd have four houses up here in the middle of the section, one windmill. So the four families lived up in the middle of a section like that. He only had to have one well, water. And so every section of land in the Nueces County, especially in the Bishop territory and around Sinton, had four houses on it, and four families lived there, and the people lived on the farm rather than in town in those days. And out around Petronilla, and where Chapman Ranch and Petronilla is now, that was all in raw land for many years after that. It was put in after we came down here. Back in 1916, I was plowing over in the back side of the field when I found a Bishop, and it started raining, the wind started blowing. Well, that was before radios and TVs or news media of any way that you could have access to. And it happened to be the 1916 Gulf Storm that tore up Bishop so bad in all of South Texas. We lived in a large two-story house in Bishop in those days, and it almost completed the demolition. Threw all the window out of it, blew the porch off of it, and
my mother and dad and we five children were in a hall right down through the middle, and we had the doors of that hall propped to with chairs. So everything in the house was blown away. So my mother was rather frightened of storm, so she had my dad get busy after that and build a bigger storm house. So in 1919, 3 years later, we had another storm just as bad as that one. And we spent 14 hours, we seven of our family spent 14 hours in a storm house at Bishop. It was one jar of water and one chocolate cake for seven of us for 14 hours. And the 1919 storm is the one that brought the water into Corpus Christi and completely washed it away, North Beach. 1,000 people, everybody on North Beach and everything out there is where the city was growing in those days, homes, was completely wiped out. Some of the old sidewalks can be seen on North Beach now that were there when beautiful homes were there. All those people were washed across the Nueces Bay over there and had decomposed so bad that just took a big tractor bulldozer and just made a big trench about 10 feet deep and wide and just pushed them over in there and covered them up. They don't even know who they were or how many. Everybody on North Beach was washed away. All downtown Corpus Christi, where the main Chaparral Street is now, and all of that water was 8 feet deep. The Yates Hotel had water 6 feet deep in the lobby. Large beams that probably came from Cuba were lying across the showroom of some of the automobiles downtown, on top of some of the new automobiles. So the water street was just level with the water was just level with it downtown at that time, as before the seawall. Back when we moved down here, they had what was from North Texas, they had low and high grade. Like when I moved down, I was in the high fifth. They had low fourth and high fourth and low fifth and high fifth grades in those days, depending on when you started school. So when we moved down here, they put me out in the high fifth in North Texas, but down here, Bishop didn't have a low and high, so they just put me in the fifth grade. Bishop didn't have a large school at that time, a building. They had one of a wooden building up in the middle of the block. As the town continued to grow, they would move students around over town in brick buildings or in a wooden building any place. And finally, in 1914, they started construction of a new three-story brick building. 1915, on January the 1st, we entered that building. All the students brought it together for the first time. And at that time, they were all over town. I remember I was flying up downtown on the main street in my class, and we'd march up. At the recess, we'd march upstairs off the main street of downtown up in the Masonic Hall room. And so on January the 1st, we were all together for the first time. And going out for athletics in those days, there were no paved roads from Corpus to Kingsville or Bishop to Kingsville and Corpus. So if we had a mess game with Corpus Christi, say on Friday afternoon and it's been raining, we would have to put our football uniform on in Bishop and catch a 9 o'clock passing train out of Bishop and go to Corpus and catch a streetcar and go out south of town, which the town just extended as far as where Del Mar Boulevard is at this time. And that was just a cotton field with a barbed wire fence around it. There was not a seat on the field, neither was there a sprig of grass on the football field. It was all just sand. And they had a couple of long benches on each side for the players to sit on, and there was not a chair for anybody else. So we'd have to play there in the mud and then catch the 5 o'clock train back to Bishop with our uniforms still on. We'd had on all day long. And that's the way in basketball, the same way, except in basketball we usually dress in the classroom of whatever school we're playing and put our clothes on top of the desk in the classroom. Corpus Christi High School was just off of Leopard Street, back of where Perkins Brothers is located now. And that building, by the way, has been torn down this week, the Perkins Brothers. That was Corpus Christi High School, the only one they had. And going over there for our basketball game, we play on the collegiate court, right back in the high school. And to get a 220 or 110-yard race in, we'd have to angle across the city block there in town just off of Leopard Street, right behind the close to where the CC Bank and Trust are located now. That was a playing field. I mean, the basketball court and the track
It was the only high school they had.
Bishop in Kingsville and Carpenter and Robstown and Sinton belonged to the same league, and we in those days would beat Carpenter about as often as they'd beat us. And 1921, when I finished high school there, I then went to Bell University, and after coming back, I went to work for my dad in a hardware store in Bishop. In 1923, I took on a commission wholesale agency for there for Magnolia in Bishop. And I bought me a Model T truck without a cab or a windshield and delivering kerosene around to the farmers about at a time, on which I made $1.10. Back in the early days when we first came down here, very often would be what would seem to be unusual rain. We'd have 10 to 15 inches of rain in 24 hours or 36 hours. At one time the water got so deep between Bishop and Kingsville on a little bridge there, just right in Bishop, on the south side of Bishop. The water was so deep there you couldn't see the bridge, and some man drove off in there and was never saw. His car completely disappeared, and several of us, after the water went down, walked that thing for about a mile and found his body. In addition to having large rainy spells as we had in those days, which would make it very difficult to get around because the main street of Bishop and all the road, even the main street of Kingsville, was mud. I've seen the mud so deep on the main street of Bishop it would take two mules to pull an empty wagon down the street. The same way with the main street of Kingsville and the sidewalks in Kingsville in front of all the places of business. Of course, the places of business were lumber or plank. The sidewalks was made of lumber, just board. And people have to go horseback most of the time when they come into town. And in front of one of the stores in Kingsville right now, there's still an old hitching post there with a ring in it where people used to drive their horses up there. It's there along there close to Ragland's, what used to be the Kingsville Hardware Company, still there from 1907 or 8, where they used to drive up there and tie their horses to that thing. It's still there, it can be seen now. Back in 1917, it was quite a sport for young fellas to go down to the depot in Bishop and watch the pastor trains going through, loading the soldier boys going to Brownville. Joe Pearson was down there, and Pearsonville was running wild. And King Ranch had a real large searchlight on top of their King Ranch mansion, which was built in about 1912, and it's still there. The ranch house is still there. This light can be seen in the Kingsville Museum here in Kingsville now. But many, many nights, for several years, I could see that light from our home in Bishop, which is only about 6 miles from Kingsville, and it was continue to turn around watching for bandits, because they were afraid bandits would come out and take their family and kill some of them. And these soldiers was on, the train would stop in Bishop, and the girls would go down and give them candy or coffee or something, and they went out, the boys were not allowed to get off the train, but they were loaded going down there, and it was, of course, I think, they actually stopped them before they got too far over into the United States, but actually, there was some shooting as far up as the Norris Ranch, and down below Kennedy County here was what they call the Norris Ranch. those days, more so than now it seemed, we had revival meetings. Some evangelists like B.B. Graham or Billy Sunday would come in to Corpus Christi or even Bishop in Kingsville and put up a large tent. And all denominations would participate. And it would go on for a week or 10 days, and hundreds of people would rededicate their lives. It was quite a common thing in those days. In fact, the biggest of churches in a small town like Bishop, the Lutherans, especially the Methodists and Baptists, would consolidate their... is that all down that way? churches and bishops, very often the young people would get together. Well, if it's going to have a revival, they would have it, a revival together. And they would all attend the 1 week at one church, and maybe the next year they'd go to the other church for a revival. The young people would get together for the, we call it BYP, you know, the Upward League, would all get together and have a lot of fun, have our parties together. In addition to having sometimes, some years, too much rain, and the farmers would lose the crop due to too much rain, we had a number of times during the last 50 years when it'd be go 2 and 3 years without raining. One of the greatest droughts that I recall, early droughts, was 1915-16, back in those years, 14-15-16, then back in the 20s, we'd go 2-3 years without rain, even in the 50s, without raining. And the Depression years came on, of course, in 1929, and I was just a young businessman. I'd been in business in 23, and I had borrowed $600 from the bank in Bishop, and I was paying it back $25 a month, and the bank closed, and the bank had sold my note along with many others to some Houston bank, and they demand payment to be made immediately. So it was necessary that I borrow the money, as many others, from some, which I did, from some individual, and paid it back. It had to be paid off immediately. Many banks were closing in those days. I remember I only had, when the bank closed, I had $300 in the bank, and I couldn't even apply that on the note that I owed, because that note had been sold to a Houston bank. I had borrowed $200,000, $2,000 to buy a little home in Bishop when I got married in 23, and my payments were $13 a month. And I recall in the Depression, 1929 and 30s, I got as far behind as 5 months, $65 behind one time, 5 months back payment on my house, and I couldn't make it. And I wrote the Savings Loan Association that I didn't have the $65, so they stepped it up and allowed me to pay it out later. But that was something that we had to experience in those days that I hope that will never happen again. Banks were closing all over the country at that time, and there was no money. You could not buy any money. Nobody was making anything to speak of. And when Roosevelt took over, the first or second day that he was elected, after he was elected president, he closed all the banks, and that stopped the run on all banks. In other words, people, he told them their money was safe, and he just closed every bank in the nation overnight, and told the people that they would not lose their money and leave it there. And so that's what, at that point, whether you're a Roosevelt man or not, at that point it was real good, because it saved our banks from just closing wholesale. Everybody was going broke. People that would rush up and start drawing the money out of their bank, and they'd pay off as long as they could, and that closed them up. But that stopped there. And then, of course, the Federal Reserve Board then established 12 districts in the United States to keep the money distributed properly over the nation. So that hasn't happened anymore. I hope it never will. In 1923, when I became 21 years of age, Bishop being in Nueces County, it was necessary that you go to Corpus Christi if you were summoned for jury duty. So if it was raining or wet weather when that summons came for you to be there on Monday morning, you would have to catch the so-called midnight train out of Bishop and go to Corpus Christi on Sunday night to be there on Monday morning for jury duty, which they paid $2 a day. And of course, your hotel and food was more than that. And you'd probably have to stay a week and come back on the train, because there were nothing but dirt roads all the way there. They first built a gravel road from Bishop to Driscoll, and then many years later paved it from there to Corpus Christi.
100 miles north of Bishop. I went to talk to a fortune teller along with a relative of mine who wanted to talk to her, and she told me that I was distant away from my home some 400 miles, and she could see that in the future there would be large towers could be seen from Bishop, like a large refinery. This is 1919, and she said it would come true. In 1942, Celanese Corporation built a mile ahead south of town, so it could be possible that's what she could see.
Mr. Harrell, we sure appreciate you taking the time and giving us the opportunity to talk with you and get your memoirs down on tape. We appreciate the time that you've given us for this, and we're sure it'll be of some benefit in our classwork and in our historical part of history of South Texas. And thank you very much.
Pleasure to visit with you, man.